Blog Talk Radio.
Civilization built the pyramids at the stake. What world out of
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi. And in case you didn't know, that was indeed the last poets. Well, we're closing out National Poetry Month and gearing up for National Black Poetry Day. Now, that's not going to happen until October 17th, but we're getting ready for it anyway because we're looking to be ready or at least to begin the first phase of publishing MWM's first poetry book that Sisters is going to be featured. Yep, we're putting the call out to Black women poets, spoken word artists, if you're interested in having your work featured in MWM 25, now is the time. Submit your work. We'll be telling you more about that a little later on. But, of course, again, you just heard the great last poets. And, of course, one of my elders, advisors, Baba Abiodun, and he's going to be joining us separately. Now, for those who and we on the March 20-year anniversary, then you may know or remember that Baba Abiodun did, of course, come. And we're expecting him to join us this year as well because he's now an intricate part of our family. So when we tell you that we're getting ready to launch the National Black Women's Writers Guild, well, we got some folk who pretty much are qualified to help us with that. And so this year, for the 25-year anniversary, again, we are getting ready to unveil the Ultra Black Print Agenda 25. And with that, introduce some of our new memberships, some of our new cadres, collectives, and so forth. We've held back long enough, waiting, watching, and so now we're not doing that anymore. We kind of know what's really going on. And so now we know we're going to move forward the way we had anticipated doing 2 decades ago, but had to go through this process of growth and development. And so many know that, you know, sometimes that's necessary. You have to go through growth and development processes in order for things to be able to advance. And so, okay, we're ready to show folks now that that's exactly time it really is. So again, family, we thank you all again for tuning in to this segment of New Day. We are really gearing up for some very powerful and exciting things. You heard me mention that the MWM25 is coming. Well, it most certainly is. And this time, it's going to be a year-long commemoration. Yep, not one day. Nope, not doing that one. We're going to do a year-long commemoration because we are building a movement, or should I say, continuing the building of the first global movement for women and girls of African descent. And with that, you know, we're going to raise some serious questions. We did so today when we were out. There was an event here in Philadelphia, a flea market that they have every month, and it was, you know, really nice, nice vibrations. And so I saw a brother that I knew, and I, you know, asked him, because he's been involved with one of the UNIA ACL groups here in Philly. And by the way, there are three different groups here in Philly that are UNIA ACL. And so, you know, these are some of the things that we want to start looking at a little closer in terms of, we talk about unity. Well, how is that really going to happen? That's the question that we're raising. Where's the plan of action? Because there's oftentimes a conversation about unity, but not really concrete action plans in order to help make that happen. Well, we're going to be introducing at least some possibilities about that. And with Black women, well, one of the questions that we were raising today with Black women is why Black women don't support other Black women from an organizational standpoint unless it's a sorority, unless it's the church or the temple or something similar to that. Political, you know, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, what have you. The point is, on a national level, not just in the communities at large, but from a national standpoint, one has to really now ask that question. Why? Because other women are doing it. Asian women are doing it. Anglo-Saxon women are doing it on a national level. They are synchronized to a great extent, or to a large extent, put it that way, on a national level. So we've got to really now ask our women, for real, this is the 21st century. We have no schools. We have no health facilities. We have no cultural centers unless it gets funded by primarily the enemy. So we're going to be talking more about that in October when we do our A Million Black Women Rising Summit to really examine what do Black women need to do in the 21st century to really be able to bring our communities and families forward. We have to examine that, so we're going to do that. Anyway, going to get back to that a little later on. We're going to also talk with a sister tonight. And this sister, I'm so happy to have met her because, again, what we've been building over this past 10 years is sisters of similar and like minds who are really ready to do some things. And what we're finding is that a lot of them have been kind of pushed to the side. You know, it's so very interesting. The stories that I'm hearing and have been hearing is a similar story. I was on a call today, a wonderful call today. And again, big ups to Baba Balao Sunni Ali. He invited me on a powerful, powerful call today, which was really focusing on What's getting ready to happen in 2024, we're in it right now, and that is the International Decade for African People. And so a lot of our nation organizations are not involved in that, and it's really sad. In this day and age, it's really sad that we're not connecting to the diaspora in a way of really representing our issues, concerns, and connecting them on a global level. So the conversation today was extremely powerful. And again, we'll have Baba Bilal and or representing the Black Belt Coalition to come on and talk about what they did today. I mean, it was incredible. But one of the things that I mentioned today was, and you know, a lot of people that were on, and they had a lot of people on, but when I said that the Men Women March brought 2.5 million, they were shocked. They were shocked. And you know, and I understand that because the system made it a purpose to undermine and also try to decrease or lessen the significance and the power, and folks fell for it. But anyway, we'll get back into that a little later on. Right now, we're going to get ready to bring in Baba Abiodun. And listen, family, if you haven't heard this serious Black man, well, then you're in for a treat. And if you have heard him, you're in for a treat. But these are the kind of brothers that we are building with, have been building with for quite a few years, and continue to build with. And so we're going to talk with Baba Abiodun Oyewole is his full name. And, of course, he is one of the co-founders of The Last Poets. Well, we opened up with For the Millions, and certainly we're going to have him to do that in October, because you know we're getting ready to do our first annual African Women's Heritage Parade, Black Women's Heritage Parade. That's a part of our National Black Women's History Project, because, again, what we're finding is the history of Black women is really not documented, archived, and taught as much as it should be. You know, again, I was out today, and a sister went to the Million Woman March. and I said, well, you know, and she told me, so we're going back to D.C.? No. I mean, yeah, at some point maybe, but what do you mean going back to D.C.? She had forgotten that it was right here in Philly, and she went. I mean, it is just amazing to me that you would see all of those Black women, and for whatever reason, it's not something that you would remember. So, you know, but I get it. I know what has happened. I know why it has happened, and best believe we are here now to do something about it. So we're going to get more into that a little later on, family. For right now, I'm going to call up our elder, Baba Abiodun, and he's going to share some information with you, with us. And let me see, and make sure I have the right number. I think I do. Hold on, something's not right there. Let me do that again. And also, again, joining us shortly after that is going to be Sister Gabrielle David. She is actually a publisher. Okay, see, again, we are connecting the black dots. She is a publisher. She's also an author herself, but she published a couple of Abiodun's books, all right, but she has also her own books. And so we're going to talk to her about the work that she's doing, because we're going to collaborate with her and others to get some of the things done that we've been talking about. But now we have folk who are in place to help make sure that we get it done. We've been waiting and waiting for folks to step up. Well, guess what? They can step off now, because we don't want folks to be jumping in and running in once they see certain things are moving. They did that before. That's not happening again. Trust me. At any rate, let's go to our live line. And hold on one moment. Uh-oh. I'm not hearing anything. What's going on?
Yes.
Greetings, Baba. How are you this evening?
I am wonderful.
It's good to hear your
yes, voice.
Yes, you are.
Uh, So so what's happening? What's on the agenda?
Well, we are live. And, of course, you are here in New Day. Hey, Mama, this month is a year of doing this radio program.
What you say?
Really? Yes, this month. Yep, 13 years straight. Independent.
Wow.
This
That's
month.
A nice
yep.
track. That's a nice track record.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you've been lucky 13.
We're really happy. Yep, that's right. Yes, indeed. We're really, you know, just, you know, again, and you certainly can attest to it, consistency is so important. And to be able to maintain, you know, for that period of time in this day and age particularly, we feel very blessed. And to do it independently, that's the other thing. So we feel very blessed about that. But, Baba, you didn't hear this, and I should have called you while we were playing it, but we came on with For the Million.
Oh, really? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's I don't know if you've ever seen, have you ever seen The Mafia? It's a production that was put together by a church in Brooklyn, Reverend Youngblood. Yeah, well, they put together this production. Actually, Sister Marimba, who used to be Donna Richards.
Yeah, I know the book, but I didn't, yeah.
Yes. Well, there's a whole production that Bishop Youngblood, St. Paul's Baptist Church, put it together years ago, about maybe 15, 20 years ago. They had this production called The Mafia because that's our term for Holocaust.
Right,
and since the Jews don't want anybody else to use that term but them. So I went to the church. One of my students in this high school I was working told me that I should come to her church because they were doing a poem of mine. I had no idea what they were doing. I didn't know anything at all about what was happening. So I said, well, what time is the production? She says, it's 8 o'clock. But you should be at the church by 6. I said, 6 o'clock? And I'm trying to think, is this girl crazy? Why would I go to a church 2 hours before time of the production? So I was in Brooklyn, and I hung out because I live in Harlem, and I was hanging out with some friends of mine. And I got over to the church around 7:30. It was a line going around the block. That was the interest in seeing this production, and I was totally unaware. So I went up to the front. I said, "I'm not going to stand on that line if my poem is in this production." So I go up to the front door, and of course the sisters, you know how we are in the church, and you got the security people. Well, there's a sister who was a security person. And she said, I said, my name is Abby O'Dune, and I've got a, I don't care what your name is, you got to go in the back of that line. I felt so bad. So I started to go back on the back of the line, but a deacon came out, and he recognized me. He said, Dune, where are you going, man? I said, somebody go in the back. He said, come on in here. So they let me pass. I sat in Reverend Youngblood's office, and I was blown away. When the church was crowded, it was packed. And when they started, I had no clue whatsoever that they were going to open up with For the Million. So I had 45 people coming out from one side of the stage doing For the Million, 45 people from the other side. So it was 90 people were doing the poem. I was sitting there in tears. I was blown away. It was amazing. But that is the hub of the Mafia, and it was so interesting because the last poets would have gigs in different states, and I would do For the Millions as part of our repertoire, and people would say, you know, I just saw a group do that a while back, and it was the church. They were traveling all over doing that production. So For the Millions has gotten quite a lot of play, yeah.
Wow. We got to get you at, Pastor Keith's church. He is incredible. Me and Sister Pam went to I haven't been to church. I haven't been to church in, I can't even remember when. Well, let me tell you, the so-called Good Friday, Sister Pam and I went right outside of Philadelphia to Pastor Keith's church because we said any time a black man is going to get in the pulpit and talk about Free Mumia Abu-Jamal, well, let me tell you, we're going to go.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, he's got the right sermon. Yes.
That's right. He tore it up. He not only talked about Mumia, he talked about the prison period and had other clergy people who are doing work in the prisons. And some of them were incarcerated themselves at one point.
This is how powerful
that thing was. He had three speakers who were formerly incarcerated. One was a so-called juvenile offender and had served 30-something years. And, when Obama did the one good thing that he kind of did in passing that bill, this brother got out. But my point is we're connecting with those kinds of ministers and people of the cloth who are not afraid to, speak truth to power. So we should bring that to Pastor Keith's church, Robert.
Hey, listen, if you arrange it, I'll be there. No problem.
All right.
Look it up.
So before we talk about the book, because this is the last day of what some people call National Poetry Month.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're going to talk about your book.
But before
we do, let's go back for 1 minute. So For the Millions is the latest. Is that the latest Last Poets album or CD?
No. The latest Last Poets. Let's see. It's on the latest, yes. Transcending Toxic Times is the last CD that we've done, and it was done by Jamel and Dean, the bass player from Philadelphia.
Philly.
Yes, he's the one that produced it,
and he gave
a nice funky track. He put, of course, he's a funky bass player, and he did a beautiful job of the background for the Millions, and that is on there. Matter of fact, that's a very hot CD because it just seemed to be very apropos, considering that we've all been going through toxic times with this virus,
as well as the
virus of the system in itself. Without the physical virus that we've been dealing with, we've been having, this mental virus for some time. The fact is that, that's the last CD that we've done. It's called Transcending Toxic Times, and it was produced by Jamel and Dean Takuma, and he's your Philadelphia resident. Yes, he is.
Yep. I've been knowing him for years. When I had my shop here in Philly called Stiltwalkers, he used to come to our shop often, It's... Oh my gosh! Beautiful spirit.
Oh yeah, no, he's a great guy, and he taught me how to shop at the flea markets in Europe, because this guy can go to a flea market and pick out some stuff that is unbelievable. He's got an eye for all kinds of clothes and things. I got a beautiful leather bag that probably would have cost me a couple hundred dollars if I got it from somewhere else, but flea markets have quite a lot of valuable stuff. But they have some serious flea markets in Europe and in Paris in particular. And Jamel and Dean, it's amazing. He's such a universal brother, because when we have gigs together, and we've done quite a number of gigs in different parts of the world, and there's always a sound check. And we are always staying in the same hotel. And he never ends up going to the sound check with us in the van or the SUV, whatever we're driving. But when we get to the spot where the sound check is, I always see Jamel and Dean walking down the block like he lives around the corner or something. I said, wow, you walk from the hotel here? He says, yeah. I said, well, how did you know how to get here? He says, Dune. He says, if you've been in one of these towns, you've been in them all. He says, they're all the same. The whole world is like his playground. I mean, this brother has no fear. And he has no problems with getting around any place. You drop him off anywhere, and he finds a way to be comfortable. I mean, he's just that cool. And it's a beautiful thing to see, because he's a great guy to hang out with, because he feels like he's familiar with everything that he sees. And he keeps that smile on his face. He's always positive. He's just a good spirit, like you said. He's a very good
spirit. Absolutely. All right. So, Baba, before we're going to bring Sister Gabrielle in shortly. I want to I wanted to connect the two because she, of course, published one of your latest books, right?
She is the only publisher I've really ever had. I mean, when it came to the first book that I ever put out was called Rooted in the Soil, but that was actually a gift. I was working at an Upward Bound program and as an assistant director of some kids, working with some kids. And throughout the course of my time there, I wrote a lot of poems, I wrote some songs. And the director and the assistant director of the program, I mean the secretary and the director, they would always get copies of my stuff and they would save it. And I wasn't aware of them saving anything. But when the program was going to be defunded and we weren't going to be around that next year, they gave me a book of my poetry that they had collected over the years. And I was just shocked. And they said, why don't you get some printed up and give to your friends? I was blown away. They had put the cover together, a picture of me, everything. It was just so beautiful. And they had named it Rooted in the Soil. And I thought that was so perfect because that's one of the lines. And they took that line and they just simply put it as a title. So I went on and I got a bunch of copies made. And I was selling it, but it was just a homemade kind of a book. It wasn't anything as professional as what Gabrielle does. So when Gabrielle came to me, she actually says, I really want to publish a book of your poetry, all of your stuff, the stuff that people know and some stuff that don't. So the first book that I got published some years ago now, so I guess over 10, 12 years ago, was called Branches of the Tree of Life. And that's really a beautiful book, and it's fabulous because it's got the poems from the last poets, when the revolution comes and all that stuff, plus newer stuff. And it's just it's become a major piece that I really feel very, very good about because Gabrielle does excellent, excellent work. When she puts something together, she dots the I's, she crosses the T's, she makes sure that the presentation of whatever she's doing is correct. And that's the one thing. Her work ethic is without question top of the line. And so with that, and then she's an independent black press, and we don't have too many independent anything. And there's a woman that's doing publishing and whatnot. My kids were talking about, Pops, you could have signed with Random House. I said, I'm not interested in making the rich richer. What's wrong with you? I mean, come on. We need to support each other. And she is doing the right thing, and I really support her efforts. And so that was the first book. And then the book that caused me to be here tonight was she asked me, she was wanting to do an anthology dealing with Black Lives Matter. And she said, what do I think about it? And I said, Black Lives Matter is not a movement. It's kind of, as a matter of fact, it's a feeble excuse for a movement as far as I'm concerned. She says, what? I said, you know, to say Black Lives Matter, I said, you got to realize I'm coming from a black power period. I said, that's like taking about 10 giant steps backwards. I know my life matters. I said, I still want some power. I said, I'm still into that black power zone, and I don't see anything else that we need to go for. I want to have power to control my life, to control the food I eat, the health care that I get, the money I make. I want to have control. I don't want to have to continue to serve other people like I'm a slave. That doesn't make any sense. I said, and for us to say our lives matter, like all of a sudden we wake up in the morning and say, you know what, I really matter. Yes, you mattered from the very beginning. We've always mattered. That's elementary. So she said, well, if you were to do an anthology about that subject, what would you call it? I would say Black Lives have always mattered. I mean, that's nothing new. And so when I said that to her, Gabrielle is a trip, because when I said it in the meeting that we had, she emails all the people that she has under her roster and says, I'll be doing this, editing a book called Black, oh, my God. And my house was flooded with manuscripts, short stories and poems and essays dealing with the subject. I mean, my study was like a post office. I had so many manuscripts. I'd get up in the morning, and I'd be reading from like maybe 6 o'clock in the morning until 12 noon just to try to decide on who was going to be in the anthology. But it came out very nice. I'm very proud of it because I did take time to read every single thing, And if anybody mentioned Donald Trump, they got eliminated, because I don't want Trump in my history. I think he's an insult to humanity, and I don't want to have nothing to do with the fact that we even had to engage ourselves with this character. I mean, he's nothing I want to talk about. So that was the way you could get eliminated if you wrote about Trump. And if you
right.
weren't teaching, if you weren't saying, you had to say something that we could use. If we're going to take time to write something, we should try to at least offer some information that folks could use. And if you're telling a story or writing a poem or anything, there should be something of value in there that we can use, as opposed to just appreciating your skills as a writer, you know?
That's right. All right.
My latest book of poetry is called Naked, and I'm very proud of that. So she has been the only real publisher I've ever really had. True.
Well, I tell you, it's a blessing to have met her. Her energy, her spirit is definitely one that we look so forward to building with her. You know, we've taken a decade to really build, you know, what we're doing with Million Women March, Universal Movement. And people really don't maybe understand that process, but if you're going to do something and you want to have it to be sustainable, there has to be certain kinds of mechanisms that you put in place, or at least try to put in place to deal with, you know, making sure it's going to have longevity. It was for
right, MW
right. was never designed to be a day. It was never that. Again, I didn't know we were going to get sabotaged, or they were going to send, you know, people in vocateurs and just, you know, other
right.
kind of things. You know, it goes with the territory, and now we've persevered. So this past couple of years, we've really been able to connect with some folk that, I mean, we just are so happy to you know, to now know who we want to work with, you know, and
right,
we've taken
right,
the
right.
time to do that. So she definitely, and one sidebar, and then we're going to get ready to bring her in, Baba. But one sidebar, and I said I was going to do this because we have to. I've reached out to several publishers in the past 2 years, right? And I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait until
okay.
another time, because I want to stay on a real positive note tonight. But two
okay.
very well-known publishers, Black. Right, because we were like, we've already demonstrated our capability. Why can't we get some folks to work with us? So
right.
I have repeatedly attempted by telephone call, emails, and so forth to connect with two Black publishers to see if we could collaborate for Million Woman March projects.
Right.
I've even talked to them on the phone. Do you know to this day I have not received any follow-up? Each time there was a follow-up, I had to do it. There's never,
right.
I've done media requests. There's never been any of that. So to fast forward, let me just say this. I talked to Sister Gabrielle last week. In 4 days, I got the books that she said she was sending so that we could, you know, so that I could see what she's doing and be really
right.
abreast, you know, so that I know what I'm talking about, right?
Right, right.
I'm just saying, I got that in like 3-4 days. And sister did. Yeah, I'm like, you know what? So I just want to say that. I just want to put that out there that, you know,
this is
the kind of folk we're dealing with.
Yeah, that's because you're dealing with somebody that has integrity. And when you're dealing with someone who has integrity, things can happen. But you know what? There are a lot of people that are talking out of both sides of their mouth, and they really... And they have all kinds of agendas going on that don't include what you're doing. And if you're not on the list if you're not on the list, then you're going to get kicked to the curb. And this is unfortunate, because we get bogged down with a lot of pettiness and routine stuff that is old hat. When there is still a movement to conduct, we are still in need of a forward movement to empower ourselves. That has never changed. We're not running around with a clenched fist post up in the sky like we used to do, but we are still in need of having power over our lives. And that's the only way we're going to see any kind of progress when it comes to social injustice, when it comes to education, when it comes to health. All that stuff can be taken care of if we have control and if we have power. And that's the only way it happens, by us uniting and having people in place who can get some things done.
That's right.
But folks have
that's
to work
right.
with people. You're a grassroots person. Your organization for black women is a grassroots organization. It's not highfalutin. It's not bourgeoisie. It is something that's basic. And when you're dealing with those upper echelons of people in the world of publishing, a lot of times they're coming from another place, and they can't get down with the grassroots movement. That's not profitable for many of them as far as they're concerned. I mean, so there is a whole unfortunate divide in that world, and it's really sad to me, because those are basic things that we need to concentrate on. You got somebody working in the hood, doing some good work, trying to organize and unify our people in a very positive way. They need all the support they can get, and we need to work together, mm-hmm. because that's how we will create the world that we would like to live in.
Ashe. Well, again, I'm definitely, you know, thankful for those who are stepping up, have stepped up. And just one quick sidebar, the two that I contacted, interestingly enough, one of them literally came out of the Black Arts Movement. And
hey,
the other
see.
One, yeah, you know, I mean, yeah. so, you know, so I went to people that I thought,
yeah.
you know, had a sense of not only, you know, understanding,
things,
but responsibility.
Things change, honey. Things change. Sometimes sometimes when you go around the scare go around a few times and you grab onto the brass ring, you know, you don't even think about what you just say, I got the ring now, and all the other stuff that you went through to get there, you forget about that, because now you got the
no
ring.
Doubt.
And that's, I mean, that's unfortunate, but we have quite a few folks who put their, who've switched horses in midstream, so to speak. And I mean, I don't like that. Like, you started the program out today talking about consistency. You've been doing this for 13
mm-hmm.
years. See, to be consistent
yep.
on purpose is to have a purpose and to be consistent with it. Oh, my goodness. That is worth more than any kind of diamond or gold you could find in the ground, because we don't have too much consistency when it comes to matters of relating to black development. You know, we got a whole bunch of inconsistency and excuses for why we can't get things done. And we really have to work from the basics, from the bottom up. It's the top is cool, middle is cool. It's the bottom part that needs to be worked with. And if you're not willing to go there, then we should just admit that and keep it moving on another level. But being consistent is something that is definitely necessary, and that's what you're doing. And we don't have too much of that.
And, Bubba, speaking of consistent, so this year, next month, as a matter of fact, if I'm mistaken, will mark the 52nd year or 51st for The Last Poet?
Yeah, no, it'll be the 52nd.
May 19th, 1968
is it, yes. So it'll be the 52nd year. I mean, like, I, you know, when I look at the fact that I've been involved with being in the vanguard of the black poetry movement for over half a century, it blows my mind.
Oh,
because
wow.
I've never really counted. Looked at it in that volume before, I mean, in terms of the years put in. But, you know, then I look and say, well, what else would I have done that would have made sense? I mean, this is an area that I've been able to manage and develop and grow from and gain something from. And like just like you say, that you feel blessed that you've been able to do the things you do. When people ask me how I'm doing, I say, I am no less than blessed. Because
that's right.
when black people endorse you, and they say, we appreciate what you're doing, and we appreciate what you're doing for us in particular. And I'm telling you, I receive that. And black folks will let you know. We don't front on that. I mean, there are places, I go to the restaurants here in Harlem, and sometimes I go in there to get some food, and they won't even let me pay because they feel like, you know, you've already paid. Just we're happy to see you, man. And you know, but the love is rich. When we really show the love that we have for one another, if you do some good for the folks, they will remember, and they will give you some love right back. And I have been the recipient of that love. So I really don't – it hurts me to see us continue to jump the fence and hang out with the other folks because for some reason, you know, we think it's better over there, or we bought the lie. Many of us still buying lies. But there is still a nice group of us who I truly appreciate, and you're one of those folks. And there are quite a few other folks around who are definitely staying on the course and doing what we have to do. I don't know if we're going to see in an entirety of the world that we'd like to see before we check out. But the one thing we're doing is we're laying a very firm foundation for a new world to exist that we have not enjoyed in some time. We know what's happened whenever we've tried to build something independently of what they've done. I mean, Black Wall Street got burned down. Rosewood got burned down. This got dismantled. They always managed to destroy places that we tried to establish where we can live the way we want to live. But they cannot destroy what's in our minds. They cannot destroy our spirits. And that's what we're working with.
That's right. That's right. All right. Ashe. All right, Baba. Well, listen, I want you to stay right there. We're going to bring in Sister Gabrielle David. And again, family, you know, it's some things to me is really divine. In fact, this year's 25-year anniversary, we titled it Divine Resurrection. But meeting this sister really kind of, you know, gave that light of divineness in this regard. You know, we began putting some components together for MWM because we saw the need to do so. For example, we started the National Black Women's Writers Guild, we're bringing forward, as well as the National Black Women's History Initiative. Because we realized as I traveled through different cities, there's so much history that black women have and contributed and so forth, but a lot of times it's not really talked about, it's definitely not documented, you know. And so, you know, we know of the key names that you hear often, you know, in Black History Month, but there are women in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our families who have made contributions in their own right. And this stuff just gets pushed to the side. So we decided we're going to make sure that we document in our cities the great works of our women in every major black city. And so we've launched the National Black Women's Project. So we'll be going to Chicago. We'll be paying tribute to, of course, Gwendolyn Brooks, Katherine Dunham, of course, you know, many that people know, but also the locals. So when I talked to Sister Gabrielle, she told me about this book that she just wrote or just, published. And I like, oh, my gosh, this is what I'm talking about. So now we have a partner to work with because she just produced a book that talks about some of the great works of black women, and many people don't know of these great works. So her book is titled Trailblazers, y'all.
Right.
And we're doing something here in Philly that we kicked off called the, you know, Great Black Women Pioneers, right? But I'm going to bring this sister in, Baba. Yeah, same thing. But now we can connect the black dots, you see,
because
she's a publisher. So now we have someone that we can literally link to make these projects, you know, really bubble, you know. So, Baba, stay right there. Let me bring in Sister Gabrielle David. I want to welcome her. This is her first time to New Day Resurrection, but definitely not the last time. So family, meet Sister Gabrielle David and one of our new Day members, family members. Hey, Sister Gabrielle.
Hey, Sister Abbas, how are you? God, how are you? Thank you so much for the accolades. I feel like a very important person.
You are.
But
are.
I see myself, I'm a worker bee, and you know, Abby and I have known each other for years. And you know, I've always been a worker bee. If there's something that can be said about what we do as human beings and as Black people in this country, has always been important to me. But I've always framed it in a multicultural way. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was known in the 90s when I was running around doing all the poetry and the literary magazine and all that. I took a stand about multiculturalism because it was my belief that while all the white academics were talking about multiculturalism, Black people are multicultural. And so that I felt that we should be taking the lead on what multiculturalism is and isn't, since we, mm-hmm. from, you know, divine intervention of slavery and all these, and segregation and separation from motherland, we know what it is to be multicultural. And mm-hmm. when I say mm-hmm. that, I'm talking about, you know, folks from the islands, folks from Africa, folks that come from here. You know, we're spread out all over the place. My grandmother used to tell me as a little girl, I was surprised because I had discovered that there were Black people in Kentucky. I said, I didn't know there was Black people in Kentucky. And my grandmother said, child, she says, Black people are everywhere, all right?
That's right.
And I never forgot that. We are everywhere. And we come from, you know, it's sad that, you know, for a long time, white people could identify as Italian American or Jewish American or Spanish American, but Black people are always lumped into this one thing just because of the color of our skin. And they never took a close look at who we are culturally, because we all have cultural differences.
That's,
you know,
right.
And it's not recognized as such. So I think that, you know, I won't say his name because Abby Dean said it once and that was enough, but when that person took over and sabotaged the White House, he was pushing a narrative that said that Black people are nothing.
Right.
All right? He said that Black people are nothing and Black women are dirt of the dirt. All right?
That's right.
Black women
are
to be used, is to be used the same way he treated white women as disposable sex objects. And that's it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So that was the thing. And when he came out with all this stuff, Make America Great Again, you know, that to me had KKK all over it. All right. What are you really saying here? Now, I grew up, he grew up 15 minutes away from where I grew up. And he has been in my life as a native New Yorker forever. And so, you know, native New Yorkers in particular, really did not support this person because they knew what he was. They knew he was a crook. They knew that he had shady business dealings. They knew that he would grasp onto anything to try to win. And what he did is he went to the underbelly of this country that we thought was still in Pandora's box. But he flipped the lid open, and all these goblins came out.
Boom.
So they were always there. And I think that Black people need to take some responsibility for that, because once the Civil Rights Amendments passed in 64, 65, Black people were more focused on trying to get what they could from those amendments, you know, voting rights, being able to getting rid of segregation and Jim Crow, and tried to lived through the benefits of that and thought that the battle was over, but the battle had not been over. The battle had just begun. And it's in hindsight that we didn't stay on top of this, which is why they're in a position now, all these years later. You got to admit, they have stayed true to what they wanted to do, is to destroy it.
To make it.
And so we have to take some kind of responsibility for that, you know, in terms of what has happened, and what needs to be done. I think that, you know, somebody, a colleague of mine said to me years ago that class plays an important role in racism, and I, like, boo-hooed him. I was like, nah, that's not true. Class does play a major role in racism and in segregation and in discrimination. It plays a major role indeed. So now, you know, at one point, most Black people were on the same level. You had Black professionals in Black neighborhoods because Black neighborhoods had to sustain themselves. So all the lawyers, doctors, Indian chiefs, they all worked in the Black community because they couldn't get work elsewhere. And once segregation fell, then all those businesses disappeared. And I think it's interesting that black folks immediately ran to the white businesses that didn't want them once they had the opportunity to do so.
Right.
And so, you know, and that to me was really the beginning of the end for a lot of black communities around the country, because, you know, people weren't keeping the money on their, within their community. You know, when I was a kid growing up, there were business people in the community you came to for everything. When the Girl Scouts, when you wanted to sell cookies, when you wanted to have an event, when you wanted do stuff, it was, or you went to them and you went to the people in the church. And that kind of thing doesn't really exist anymore. I mean, all those programs we saw growing up where you'd have programs, in the back of the programs there would be these business cards because they gave money towards the event to make it happen. Everything was self-sustained, and it's not like that anymore. And, you know, for me, I was just so frustrated and so depressed when this election came through that I just couldn't look at the news or read the news for about 6 months. And I'm a news junkie. I just couldn't deal with it. And I just sat here thinking, what do I do, you know, as a black woman in America? I've got this press. We managed to get a contract with one of the most distinguished university distributors in the country, University of Chicago Press. But we need to make money, and we need to get something out there. And I don't want to make money that's not meaningful. It has to be meaningful, all right, for me. You know, because a lot of people write a lot of garbage, and they sell a lot of books, and the books are meaningless. They're, you know, you read them, you dispose of them like toilet paper, all right? So I didn't want to do that. So I wanted to do something that would be meaningful, that would fully represent what the press does, and to have some historical and sociological difference in the world. And I just sat there one day looking at this TV, just really pissed, and, you know, make America great again. Wait a minute. Black women, we've made America great.
That's right.
And from that one phrase, I changed it around. Some people didn't like it. I said I didn't care because it's perfect. Because black women helped make America great.
That's right.
And as I delved into this, it was supposed to be just one book. And as I delved into it, I realized that I needed to do two books. Because I unearthed, many of them I heard of, but their stories weren't the stories that I heard. And or some of them, their stories are rarely told. And so as time went on and the book got bigger, it kind of, you know, birthed itself. Then it was four volumes. And my board member said, the books are too big. You can't sell 800-page book. Make it six volumes. So we're up to – we're doing the six-volume series. The first one came out, and it features activists, dancers, and athletes. And, you know, I thought the activist thing would be a breeze because, you know, I've been involved in activism for most of my life through the arts. But even the digging in around the woman activists was really a trip because there was more to it than meets the eye, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the woman activists that we grew up with and then you look at the woman activists that exist now, They're handling and dealing with different things like climate change, LGBTQ issues, you know, all kinds of stuff. But they're still focusing on trying to help black women get to the next level. They're following the trail that was blazed before them. So each section, the book is divided into three sections. Each volume is divided into three sections. This is, like I said before, activists, dancers, and sports, you know, women in sports. And then there's also what I'm working on now is the volume two, which will feature visual artists, politics, and public service women, composers, songwriters, and conductors. And volume three, which will come out in the fall, will feature literature, business, women in the military, and film, music, and TV production. And so there's quite a bit of things that black women have done and are continuing to do And I was speaking to Abby June because I was doing a Zoom at University of Illinois, and one of the things that they liked what I said was, I said, you know what, black women, you know, this term that came up, black women are not hidden figures. We're not hidden. We're always there. I don't know why they use hidden figures. Historical texts rely on only a mere sampling of black women and their achievements, and there are thousands of unsung trailblazers that have been typically omitted from the record, and their stories, they need to be told, especially during Black History Month and Women's Month.
That's right.
And then the other issue for me was, well, there's always been this one-sided and revisionist perspective on the same black male leaders who are heavily promoted during Black History Month and beyond, while black women's contributions to black history and the black present are either othered, erased, or overlooked. And this is one of the things that needs to change, all right?
Yes.
You know, I had spoken the other day on another program about Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks is one of my favorite women in the book. And now, I mean, I love all the women in the book. I've breathed, dreamt of these women for forever. But Rosa Parks is my favorite because, you know, these women, all these women in general, did not wake up and say, I want to be a trailblazer.
Right.
They decided they wanted to do something, and they were stopped from doing it. And as a result of moving forward and fighting to get to have the right to do what they wanted to do, they became a first, they became a trailblazer, they became, in some cases, an icon.
Right.
Rosa Parks, and the other thing of it is that some of them got sick. Some of them got sick and died. Some of them, you know, pushed away from the scene because it was too overbearing emotionally and physically. You know, black women are very bad when it comes to self-care. The tremendous stress that you carry to be this trailblazing woman. And so Rosa Parks' story is quite simple. You know, when she decided not to get out of that seat, it wasn't, oh, she's a tired seamstress with tired feet, all right? This was a woman who was an activist her entire life. She was prominent in the NAACP. She was prominent in a number of organizations. She knew all the folks, you know, in civil rights. And then it was black women who started the boycott. The black women saw what she did, and they scrambled, and they mimeographed in the church basement, stay off the bus. And then they called the black men and said, oh, by the way, we've just made a strike. We're not getting on the bus tomorrow. And then the black men had to all come together quickly, and they created the Montgomery Improvement Association, and they stuck King in charge because he was low man on the totem pole, so if there was trouble, you know, he could afford to lose his spot. He had just moved there to work at the church. And all of a sudden, they took it over. Rosa Parks was not a seamstress. She was a tailor, and she was an activist. Rosa Parks was chased out of Montgomery and couldn't work for 10 years. She and her husband got sick and ill from this thing, all right? But she was also a trooper. And she believed in uplifting the race. So she did whatever they wanted to. She went around the country, the speaking engagements, raised money. She did all that stuff. All right? But she also understood the dynamic. And she only spoke of it many, many years later and very lightly because she considered herself a race woman and she wouldn't talk badly about people. But she held her head high and took a lot of stuff. And people don't know that story, and there have been a couple of great books written about her. The same thing with Coretta Scott King. Coretta Scott King, when her husband died, the SCLC said, okay, she came to the board meeting. They said, oh, it's okay. Just make a couple of speaking engagements and knit. Go home and knit and take care of your kids. And she was like, I'm not doing that. She started that organization with her husband's name on it. And, you know, she went through bumpy roads trying to get it done, but she got it done. But she wasn't going to sit back. She was always an activist, but nobody ever thinks of Coretta Scott as an activist. They think of her as the, you know, the mother of the, you know, that's what they always say. Oh, Rosa Parks is the mother of the civil rights movement.
And speaking of that, Sister Gabrielle, a little sidebar. I'm so glad that Sister Claudette Colvin got the chance to, you know, get some appreciation before she made transition. And of course, for those that don't know, you know, she was the one that did the seat sitting on the bus thing even before Mother Rosa Parks. But she wasn't going to get no credit for it.
Rosa Parks always, but there's more to it than that. It was a bunch of women.
I know.
And Rosa Parks was supporting them, okay?
Right.
And anytime they came to Rosa Parks with it, she always corrected the record and said, no, I'm not the
first. That's right.
There were other women that was doing it.
And the other thing that we learned in study, because we call hers, we have now 25 sister saints. See, we call them saints. And so for the Million Women March Sisterhood, they're a part of our pantheon. They're part of our, you know, sisters that we pay tribute to every year. And one of the things that we learned about St. Rosa Parks is that she used to be armed. She used to carry a pistol.
What?
And they don't know, people don't know the story of how she fought before the boycott thing. She was in the streets fighting for black women who were being raped. Such is the story of Recy Taylor.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely.
Of course. And people don't know about that. And she
That's
was
amazing.
Involved with, she was involved
so
with all that stuff. Oh, yeah. And
so
I
we
talk
only
about
get,
it in the book.
That's amazing because... Right. I mean, the way they have her laid out in terms of how they've addressed her in history that most people know is much different than what I'm hearing right now.
Yes.
I had no idea she had carried a gun.
Baba. One last thing, Baba. She loved Brother Malcolm. According to our research, she loved Brother Malcolm.
Oh, that's fabulous. That's great. Yeah, well, that speaks volumes unto itself because we know what he was about. I mean, come on.
You know, that's why Rosa Parks to me is my favorite out of all of them. And it's so funny, that photo that you see in the book of her, that was an AP photo, and it was very expensive. We had received, I was very fortunate, I should mention this up front, that I decided to put photographs in the book because I want people to see what these women look like.
Uh-huh.
So the book has like 80 photographs in it, all right? And, of course, that's expensive. So I was able to get funding from discretionary grants from Open Meadows Foundation, the National Sorority of Phi Delta Kappa, Inc., which is an independent sorority that takes in other sorors from different organizations. Their thing is education.
Uh-huh.
The AKAs gave us money. The Women's Sports Foundation gave us money. The New York Women's Foundation gave us money. And the International Association of Blacks in Dance. And that's what paid for, you know, helping to put this book together. But I wanted the photographs. And then I got really good deals with people. As soon as I said the name of the book, I got, you know, discounted rates on a lot of stuff. And so when you're doing a book like this and you have photos, you have to pick. And I think, Sister Empress, when you flip through the book, you could see that the photos are where they need to be. These photos really speak for themselves. And, you know, I didn't want to do the typical photo of her sitting on the bus. I used the photo of her much older than how we remember her, not from the 50s, but, you know, up until she died. And there's something about the look on her face with that photo with such joy and surprise. She was always surprised that people, you know, always was drawn to her and adulated her. They thought she was so great. And she was a very low-key woman because for her, it wasn't about being famous or making money. It was about doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the one of the reasons why I think Black people around the world look to Rosa Parks as that figure And as time goes on and more academics are doing research on Rosa Parks, they're seeing, you know, that there's more depth to her than the way it was simplified as a media so that the guys can run it and do what they want to do. They were kind of annoyed with her. Even the black women who were involved with the boycott, they were all jealous. They got jealous and petty. She didn't ask to be famous, you know. And so, you know, there you go again with crabs in the barrel. What do we do? Right. Why can't we have the same grace that Rosa Parks had when she allowed herself to be put in that position and to come out on the other side?
You know, when you're in an environment which is like such as America, you're going to pick up a lot of bad habits, a lot of bad ways. I mean, I don't think we would be nearly as petty if we weren't listening to petty mouths most of the day in everything on a lot of levels. We're almost kind of trained to think on a petty level because the people who are running the educational systems or who are running things in general are very petty, petty themselves. And unfortunately, black folks suffer from gullibilitis, and we go for almost anything, and we allow ourselves to be duped by people who we should not be duped by, as Malcolm said, bamboozled
run amok.
And it's so sad because I know that there's more substance to us, but yes, that petty behavior is one of the things that has destroyed movements on so many levels and has destroyed personalities because of petty jealousies, things that shouldn't exist, but they do. And we have to recognize that some of us have gotten sick behind dealing with this sick character.
Absolutely. And, Baba, let me just share with you because, you know, I told Sister Gabrielle, I'm actually working on 5 books right now. One of them is The New Philadelphia Negro. But the other one, of course, is the other one is The True Story of the Million Woman March. And one of the things I'm going to put in that book is how a female here in Philadelphia who is very well known and connected to a lot of the movers and shakers, as they call themselves here in Philly. And when they were, you know, trying to reel me in to their little club, I call it, she finally got real frustrated with me because I would not comply with all of their little gestures and stuff. And she lost control, and she literally said, and this is a true story, y'all, she literally said, the old girls are not going to let you do anything in this city.
Wow.
This is what she told me. I didn't even know this existed.
Wow.
She literally told me that the old girls are not going to let me do anything in this city.
Well, I think that the division, I think, you know, I think in terms of life, you're always going to have, you know, generational issues. You know, when people talk to me about Black Lives Matter and all that, I say, well, that's another generation. I did my thing back in the 60s and the 70s. You know, in the 80s, you know, I, you know, the new generation needs to come along because they're going to have to live long enough to have to deal with the aftermath. I'll be gone by then. So, you know, 20, 30 years from now. So, you know, I think that each generation has different ideas of how they should do things. And I think that what a lot of the older civil rights people have done is that, you know, they talk amongst themselves, but they won't publicly think bad about them because, you know, they're doing, at least they're trying to do something, whether you agree with the way that they're doing it or not.
Right.
So I think that generational thing is thing. But what, one of the things that I did do in this book is that I did talk about the relationship between black women and white women, which is very important because, you know, you've got to deal with the suffragette movement, the women's live movement, and all the rest of that. And why... why are we here now where we have white women calling the police on people and all this other kind of stuff? And how is it that I think 54% of white women voted for that man to go into office with all the things that he was saying? So these are the kind of issues that you know, we need to – I believe that it's important for us to cross a bridge and meet people – I'm not saying halfway – but cross a bridge to the other side where there are people, other people, with other people of color, with like-minded white people, in order for us to get to the next level. Because, you know, it's, even though a lot of people aren't as educated in this country as they should be, education has played a role with those people who have gone to schools and who have really got into learning about what real history is, that black history. I've had a couple of white folks say, you know, black history is not black history, it's American history. Why do they separate it? Because it's separated because we had to. When Woodson created the Black History Day, which turned into a week and now a month, because we weren't being acknowledged in the books. You know, my mother used to send me to the library. She said, go to the LCU's library. It had just opened up. And when I got old enough, she said, go to the Schomburg when it was still a brownstone on the corner there. And I would go. I would go out of my way. No one had a gun to my head. I would go out of my way because my teachers were telling me one thing, but I knew it not to be entirely true. But not everybody has the incentive to do that, you know.
And then
the issue also was that, where are the books? I mean, there are a lot of books that black women could be writing about, black academics, and they're trying. A lot of them are trying. But there are so many women that I wanted to put in the book, but I didn't have the time or the inclination to go to libraries and institutions and try to dig up some of this work. Also, COVID had hit, and a lot of those places had been shuttered. So there's a lot of missing information that's not in the books about some of these women that I've written about. I'm hoping that as, you know, the Trailblazers is like a love letter to black women.
Okay.
A love letter to black women, but it's open for everybody to read. It's a love letter to black women. It's a book that's open for other women of different races to read, because it's also talks about womanhood. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a book that's open to anybody else that has an interest in learning about how detrimental black women have been to this country. It was black women that ran the civil rights movement. If you want to erase the black women in the civil rights movement, they would not be a Martin Luther King. Okay?
Right. And the same also for the lesser known black liberation movement as well.
Exactly right.
You know, because, see, that's another area that didn't get the kind of notoriety in certain circles. But listen, before you both go, I want to open up the phone lines for any of our family that wants to ask a question or give a comment. We want to make sure that you do that. And also, we want to make sure that folks know where they can get these books that you, the Two Leaf, is publishing, yours and Baba Abi Odun's. We want to make sure. And by the way, we'll be featuring the books you heard them talk about tonight, family. As you all know, we are going to create a page on our new site that will feature the people that we're working with. We're going to be featuring some of their books, okay? And so that's coming. So our new website should be up in about a week, and then you will see our book list of suggested readings as well as the books that we're going to be featuring, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So,
again,
we're going to... Oh, listen.
That's wonderful.
But, yeah, one other thing, I just want to say this, though, about the organizing part that you just mentioned with other people and all of that. All I'm going to say about that is this, my sister, is different strokes for different folks. And everyone can't do the same thing and shouldn't, okay? So some of us have to be very clear and very, you know, on point about our organizing and who we do it with and why, because my experience has been it's been too much ambiguity and too much confusion, you know, and not enough distinguishing various areas. And so because of that, see, other people can do certain things because they have their own language, they have their own religion, they have their own cultures, so they can do certain things to that degree. We still have to kind of, you know, put that in place to the degree where it's not lumped in with everybody else.
I wasn't trying to suggest for you to do anything otherwise. I mean, I understand. I think that what you're doing is very important. you know. And I think that, you know, from my perspective as a black woman who has been in publishing for 30 years, I believe that this is a black, brown, female-led press, all right? So we make the final decisions on who gets published and who doesn't get published, all right?
We're
open to different types of people who agree with social justice and racialized issues, regardless of what their nationality is, all right? But that's not the same thing as doing an organization of what you're doing, which is completely different, because I think that there needs to be more consistently effective black women organizations that women could come to, you know, which is why we went to AKAs, you know, because the AKAs is an important black women's organization that is consistently churned out and has supported, you know, black women doing things, you see? So there are different, you know, there are different levels of how I work it for me, for what I need to do.
I got you.
I'm not saying that's an expectation or critique or anything else like that. No, not at all.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And I understand that.
Organization. You know.
Right. Right. And then I just wanted to clarify that, because sometimes, you know, we have our listeners are very, you know, is wide in terms of the different levels of political comprehension or involvement. And so I always like to make our position for MWM explicitly clear. We are self-determined.
Well, I think it was clear when I saw the information about your organization.
Right. Oh, no. I know you did. I know you did. But again, you know, because we have listeners, again, from different areas of thought and so forth. And I always, you know, I never want them to be confused about anything that we're doing, because here's the reality. As you all know, the white women had the Women's March in 2018. Initially they tried to call it the Million Woman March. You see, so over the years, I've had to make sure that people were clear. We had absolutely nothing to do with that. I've never had corporate sponsoring. I've never had major benefactors or grants, none of that. And we've now figured out how to get later.
So, Sister Empress, does that mean you weren't wearing a pink pussy hat?
Yeah, I guess I do. Yep. but you know, but some people really initially thought that, oh yeah, that's and so I'm just saying, I've learned now. See, years ago, like you started off, sister, in saying that, you know, you don't feel a certain way about your work and all of that. I didn't either. And that's why I'm very adamant now about making sure that people hear about black women, because the lesson that I learned by not doing that initially was people jumping out there and putting out misinformation. Now, of course, this is a different arenas, but I'm just saying, I literally had to surface because there was so much, not only misinformation, straight up lies about things that I had to put a face on this whole situation. But again, it's two different, you know, situations. Yours is, you know, different. But I'm just saying, because again, we have sisters and brothers that listen from all walks of life. And one of the things I was very adamant about, I said I would never sit back and let what happened to me happen to others without me saying something.
Right. Mm.
Because nobody pulled my coat. I got my butt kicked. And I said, I would not let that happen to somebody else if I could avoid it. But listen, stay right there. We have a couple of callers. Okay, caller, you are at 0519. 0519, your mic is open. Welcome to this segment of New Day.
Peace and blessings, Empress. I just called in to say you have the most fascinating guest. I'm like, where did she get these people from? You know, but a very powerful a show tonight. And I just wanted to chime in and let you know I chimed in late, but I'm listening. And what both of you are saying, we need every bit of it. We need all the different share sister organizations that we can get. Everyone is unique in their own way, and that's my little 2 cents for today.
Thank you, my sister.
The one thing that I'd like to say is that black women have been at the forefront of every single thing that's happened in this country that has any sound of positivity to it. There is nothing that we've left out of. I mean, and it's very unfortunate. It's like we talk about the hidden figures, and I like what the professor said to you, Gabrielle. They're not hidden. They've been ignored, and that's an issue.
Yes.
And so when you ignore people who diligently work and earnestly work all their lives to make something good happen for others, that's a crime. And that's what you're both solving those crimes now by doing what you're doing. Gabrielle has got Trailblazers, which is like letting you know, yeah, if you have been able to walk your dog, it was the sister that made the leash. I mean, come on. The deal is that we have sisters who have done every aspect, everything you could imagine, but a lot of folks don't know that. I mean, that's why I thought it was so appropriate for us to finally have a stately black woman as the First Lady of America. As far as I'm concerned, Michelle Obama is the only true First Lady that we've ever had because she represents the strength of what America is, and that's based on the fact that it was built on our backs. And we've always been, and the women have had to suffer the greatest burden of all. You had to take care of their kids, take care of them, and take care of your man. That is who in the world, and no one would give you the respect. I mean, I'm waiting for Tyler Perry to do a whole story about the value of the black woman somehow, but see, I don't think he's going to be able to do that because he's so busy portraying a black woman in his shows. And that's a mockery when we need to have real stories told about the real value of what makes America great is black women. Black women have always been at the forefront of making changes that make the world a happier place. And we can go back as far as Kemet, and you'll discover that without a black woman, you don't have much to think about that's going to bring joy and glory to nothing. And people need to recognize that. This is a period where the matriarch has got to step up because the patriarch has fallen short. And it's time for mama to step up and take charge. I look at everything in relationship to nature itself. Mother Nature is acting up. And she's making it quite clear. She's not happy. And we don't call Mother Nature Father Nature. We call her Mother Nature. And when mother is not happy, the world is not a happy place to be in. There's snow when it should be sunshine, and there's no rain when it should be some. I mean, come on. There's a whole bunch of things missing. A whole bunch of things are out of order. The woman is very key. And to think that we have a whole movement where there are guys, because, yes, every man has 23 X chromosomes, 23 Y chromosomes. So there's a woman in every single man. But then we get it twisted because now some men want to go overboard and become women. And that's not you're not praising or giving gratitude to a woman by doing that. You're mocking her, and it's an insult to her existence. Because a woman is a full-fledged human being who has something to offer and something to share that comes from inside. It's nothing that you can create on the outside to make yourself look like you can do the things that a real woman can do.
Ooh, all right. Thank you, sister, for your comment, and thank you, Baba. Wow, let me go to the lines again. Let me see. Family, again, if you have a question or a comment, please feel free to press 1 now. We would love to have you join us. In the meantime, But I'm just seeing something, and I just want to replay this every now and then, but I'm going to play it again, as they say. Play it. It's so nice, you got to do it twice. That's what they used to say here in Philly. So check this out.
The most protected person in America is the black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the black woman. The most neglected person in America is the black woman. And as Muslims, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us to respect our women and to protect our women. And the only time a Muslim really gets real violent is when someone goes to molest his woman. He will kill you for our woman. I'm making it plain, yes. We will kill you for our woman. We believe that if the white man will do whatever is necessary to see that his woman gets respect and protection, then you and I will never be recognized as men until we stand up like men and place the same penalty over the head of anyone who puts his filthy hands out to put in the direction of our women.
I love it.
All right.
Yes. And Malcolm has six daughters.
That's right. Yes, indeed. On that note, family, we want to remind everyone, next Saturday we kick off our campaign, Stop Hurting Our Sisters, 3 o'clock here in Philly. It'll kick off to start the campaign, a national campaign to start bringing greater attention to all forms of violence and abuse of our women and girls. This is a part of our 25-year anniversary, one of the programs that we're taking nationwide. The kidnapping, the sex trafficking in particular all over the country is off the hook, the missing black women and girls. So we're raising attention to this and an action plan. So just wanted to give y'all that little sidebar. We'll be telling you more about it before we close out. But let's go back to Baba Abiodun and Sister Gabrielle in the house, y'all. Woo! Powerful.
Well, the book, I wanted to just say that the book is available on all major outlets, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever you normally go to shop for books. They could be ordered from bookstores. We're working on doing partnerships with black bookstores, which has kind of been set aside because of COVID. One of the interesting things is that as the big chains die out, in New York, I've noticed that there are a lot of black women, a number of black women who have opened up bookstores.
Right.
And so, that's an area that black women are getting into, So for a long time, Sisters was the only bookstore in New York for many years that was run and operated by black women. And now you have some other younglings coming along, and they're starting to set up cafes and bookstores throughout New York City that's run by them in terms of doing community service and readings and stuff like that. And so that's the kind of atmosphere at some point, once things lighten up with this COVID business, that I want to get into in terms of working closely with black-owned bookstores in the country.
Oh, wonderful. And you do know that that's where the Million Women March came out of my shop, which was called Stilt Walkers, and it was a bookstore also. So we're very familiar. That's what I was telling you about. Our brother, used to come by our shop. We had one of the best collection of children's books, black children's books, not just from the U.S., but from the diaspora when we had our bookstore. And so, we're planning to open another one next year, by the way. So, Sister Gabrielle, we're going to have some good conversation. And listen, I'm here to support. When you're ready to start reaching out to black bookstores, please let me know, because I know a lot of them, well, the ones that are still in business from when I was in business, I know them personally, and I know the book business as well, because my daughter's father actually had one of the first black bookstores in this country. So I'm kind of familiar with that area. It's just not one that I have applied myself to lately, but certainly, you know, we have a history connected to that. So again, when you're ready to start reaching out to the bookstores, again, as quiet as it's kept, people always ask, well, you know, the name on the mush, how could you do that? Again, we used a technique that is really traditional for our people. And again, I'm putting it in my book because there was no internet 25 years ago that people were using.
Absolutely not.
So to bring 2 million black women together physically, that was unheard of and, you know, can never be done because it was, at least in that same time frame, because it was the 20th century. So we're etched in stone. Okay.
Well, you know, you said that because, you know, when Al Sharpton spoke at Rosa Parks' funeral, which I put toothpicks on my eyeball because I wanted to see it from beginning to end. I think it was like a 7-hour funeral. And what he said is that we should have a Rosa Parks Day. And he said, you know what, back in the day, there were no – he goes, why is it that we can't organize? We got all these computers and cell phones and stuff like that. And nobody, people can't even organize to meet, to have a block association meeting. Whereas when back then, people, you know, were mimeographing and handing out flyers and pounding the pavement. And you could get a crowd of 400 or 500 people to show up to discuss some of the issues that needed to be discussed and using the church as a base to do it. And
right.
So, you know, all these things that happened in our history didn't have social media. People connected to each other on a very personal level in their neighborhoods, and people knew who to go to get this done and that done, and it was quite
That's
different.
Right.
So the issue now is that, okay, you could create an organization with a tweet, but can you sustain an organization with a tweet? You
yep.
know, and
That's
it's
right.
and it's hard work to sustain, implement, and sustain an organization, because in doing so, your hands are going to get dirty. And
That's
you have
right.
to take time to
yep.
learn about the history of why you're doing what you're doing and what the benefits are to the community and what the end result will be. And I know that there's been, you know, a lot of different, over the years, there have been people who, you know, have been Malcolm Xers as opposed to Martin Luther Kingers, you know, in terms of segregation,
mm-hmm.
nonviolence, in terms of what Malcolm was talking about. But the bottom line is that what Martin Luther King's legacy is that he got two laws on the books. He headed that Montgomery bus boycott, and he was able to get a president of the United States to sign the kind of legislation that needed to be signed to protect the interests of black people. You know, and that's part of his, you know, legacy, if not anything else, whether you agree with his politics or not. And doing that part of it is the dirty work. You know, it's great to march and hold a sign in your hand, all right, and getting the attention of the public, but it's the other thing to have to deal with the politics and to fight to get it on paper, to get it done so that you have something to show for what you're fighting against and fighting for, you know.
Yep.
So there's,
yep.
you know, there's a lot that goes along with that. So I'm hoping that, you know, the fact that you're Sister Empress, that you're taking so much time to cultivate these events that are going to be coming up. You spent years
yes.
doing it, and there's a reason why.
That's
because
right.
you understand that in order for it to be successful, in order for you for a movement to make movement, you have to be organized. You have to decide
Absolutely.
What your parameters are. Who you're going to deal with, who you're not going to deal with, who can you depend on, all those things come into play, you know.
That's
yes,
right.
indeed.
It's very important.
Yes,
That's
indeed.
True.
And by the way, we've now also had the Million Woman Party because, again, we realize that we have to operate politically, but we don't want to be beholden to no particular party. And taking the guidance of Fannie Lou Hamer and others, Ella Baker,
oh,
Mother
yeah.
Ella Baker, you know, again. And by the way, we do commemorate, again, with our 25 Sister Saints, with St. Rosa Parks being one, every year. Every year, either the Earth Day or the Transition Day or both, we do something, either a special edition of our radio program or some kind of a forum or whatever, every year for our 25 Sister Saints, and she's one of them.
Yep.
Okay.
So listen, before we go, Sister Gabrielle, you have an event coming up. right?
Oh yeah. What's happening is, well, yeah. I have an event coming up. I became a board member of a new foundation based in St. Louis called the Shirley Bradley LaFleur Foundation. And Shirley Bradley LaFleur was a poet, professor, activist, and was very involved in the Black arts movement. And she passed away 2 years ago when she was the St. Louis poet laureate. Daughter, Lybeth LaFleur, and her other two daughters have come together to do this foundation. And they're having their first gala event in St. Louis on May 6th at the Grandel in St. Louis. So if you're from St. Louis, you should check out MetroTix and buy a ticket. And if you're unable to attend, then I would suggest that you go to the sblfoundation.org and donate. They're putting together programming for the community. They also have a scholarship in Shirley Bradley LaFleur's name. The gala itself is going to feature her work, Rivers of Women, a Quora poem, which is a fabulous. And I published the books for both for her for Rivers of Women, which is also available, as well as her book, Brass Bones and Rainbows. So it's going to be a wonderful event. People are coming out from all over. You know, and I'm real excited about it, and we feel it's going to be a success, and we're hoping that the Black community will help support, you know, who Shirley Bradley LaFleur was, and her legacy. That's May 6th at the Grandel in St. Louis. MetroTix, that's where the tickets are.
St. Louis has a rich history of Black art too, because that's where Miles Davis comes from there, Barbara Antia, Leon Thomas, and, of course, Catherine Dunham.
Shirley
knew all of those people. Shirley knew all of those folks. And, you know, I guess the best way to describe Shirley would be one of her poems. I just want to read six lines of it. It's from The Women Gather. The women gather, mothers, daughters, sisters, wives, and sweethearts, grannies and aunts, Sister Belle and hoochies with their hellhounds and hollers, their children and men, lost lovers, lifted, left over, forever and lasting with skeletons, secrets, gree-gree and hush-hush folded in little bitty pieces. The women gather, knitting hands, restitching their lives, reconnecting the circle, piecing the quilt to keep us warm. From generation for generations and generations to come. And that's Shirley Bradley LaFleur.
And of course,
we remember Sweet Honey in the Rock, The Women Gather. I remember their, version of that. But wow, that's wonderful. And I would be remiss if I didn't give congratulations to one of our poets here in Philadelphia, City Laureate, and that's Dr. Sonia Sanchez.
She just won the Jackson
Poetry Prize.
Yeah.
Yes, and she also won the other, what was the other one called? A Lifetime Achievement Prize. And
okay.
I've got to, what, I'll find, oh, the Lillian Geist Prize, the Dorothy and Lillian Geist Prize. She just won that also.
Is a friend to all Black poets, and I have a lot of cherished memories coming out to Philadelphia, spending time at her home, her coming to New York and supporting my literary events over the years during the 90s. Abby Doon, you know, could tell you his relationship with her. She has always been such an open, warm, accessible Black woman, everyone, you know.
She's been my mentor for some time. She's the only real female mentor that I've ever had, because when I first saw her poem in a bookstore in Harlem, it was the Liberation Bookstore, which was another bookstore that was manned by her sister, Una.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, that was the place that if you were really of a revolutionary mindset, you had to be at that bookstore, because it was no other place to get those books. And Sonia's a big old poster of her was in there, and the poem on there, which I can't do on the air, but it was unbelievable, and it set me off into becoming a poet in a serious way, because she's always been fire, and I appreciate her very much. I call her every so often just to check on her, let her know I'm thinking about her, and because she's a real beautiful person, and I'm just happy that she's still with us.
And we're trying to reach her. I've been trying to reach her son, Mungu. I know him because we want to pay tribute to her and a few other black women that we call pioneers here in Philly as a part of our 25-year anniversary.
Okay, well, you got her number, right?
Well, I thought I did, but the number that I have, it's not working, so I've been trying to reach her son because I know him, and I haven't been able to catch up with him yet.
Well, if I get a hold of her, I'm going to try to call her this week,
okay.
And if I talk to her, I'll tell her that you're trying to get in touch.
Great,
she'll get in touch with you.
Great,
okay.
Very good. Because we'll also be paying tribute to, and I'm sure you remember Deanna Williams. She started she was very much involved.
Yeah, she started the I Am Awards.
The
International African American Music Association. Because we got one. I got one the same time that they gave one to Billy Eckstein and Dorothy Norwood, the Norwood sisters. And she's a very dear friend of mine. And she was married to
Kenny Gamble.
Yeah, she's married to Kenny Gamble, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I know her very well.
We'll be paying tribute to her. She's one of our pioneers, black women pioneers. And the other one is Trudy Haynes. And now recently in the sports area, Sister Gabrielle, Dawn Staley. She's from Philly.
Yes, she's in the book.
She's the coach of the championship basketball team, South Carolina.
Yes.
I didn't know Dawn Staley. Dawn Staley's from Philly. I didn't know she's from Philly. She's a feisty little sister, too.
Yes, she is.
She gets it done. I love it. I love it. You know what? There's very little that we can talk about where women don't have their hands in. I mean, matter of fact, I don't want to be a part of anything that my sisters are not involved in because I know that it's going to be a sweeter trip. If my sisters aren't involved, it's not going to be happiness. I know that because you'll give it flavor. Whatever we're doing, the sisters always give whatever the event is some real flavor. And we need that. That's important.
We feel the same about our real black men, too. Best believe it. That's why we got a component for MWM that we call Brothers in Support. That's our brotherhood. So, you know, we make sure people know we're not separated.
No. And we should never be because our liberation depends upon each other. It's not going to be gender trip.
No doubt. All right, family. Well, listen, we're going to get ready to close out. Family, we have been talking, of course, again with Sister Gabrielle, David, and what can we say? I mean, we're getting ready to really do some things, and it's going to be wonderful, to say the least. It's time. And so, you know, we're bringing these things forward. And, of course, Baba Abi Odun, always a blessing and an honor to have him with us. And, again, we plan on having you here with us this time around again, Baba, for our 25. You know, it's been 5 years we've been together.
Yes, well, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure being on with Gabrielle because I truly respect her work. She's true to everything she's doing, and we need to have sisters who are willing to get the job done from beginning to end. And it has not been easy. She is one of these, you know, like folks always say, when you get knocked down, you got to get back up. Well, Gabrielle is a classic example of having been knocked down and never staying down. She's going to find a way to get back up and get it done. And that kind of resilience is admirable. You can't do anything but just applaud that because a lot of times when we get knocked down, we say, man, what the hell am I doing this for anyway? And then we just go ahead and leave it alone. But when you get back up, you get back up, refocus, and ready to go to work and to find a way to accomplish what your goal was in the beginning. And that speaks a volume, sets to her character. And I just wanted to point that out because I've known Gabrielle for some time, and I don't know anybody who's got a better character than she does, because she is true to what she says. She's not going to just tell you something to make it sound right. She's going to follow it up with action.
I love it. I love it. That's what we're talking about. Well,
oh, yeah.
Lisa, she's already agreed to join us in October, and we're going to have her to do some book signings because, you know, we're going to do some workshops for Black women writers and so forth. So we're going to be featuring, you know, some of the books that she's publishing and that she's actually penned herself. So,
okay.
Hey, as they say, it's on and on. We're ready to move the
story
forward.
Yeah, my pleasure. I saw the email. You put out a call to arms. You were very surprised that I responded to you, which I thought was interesting, and because I wanted to find out what it was that you were doing. And, and I said, I remember I said to you, and I think you held your breath. I said, well, is there any money involved? And you said, no. I said, okay, that's okay. I can work around that, you know, because there's always a place to stay in D.C. There's always a place for me to stay in Philadelphia, you know.
All right.
What is it that you need for me to do to help you with your organization? So I'm a Black woman in America. I have no choice, do I?
Oh, I know that's right. Well, you know, the way that we've learned how to do it is, as they say, we do in-kind services. You know, that's the way we were taught, meaning we know how to connect other stuff that generates other things. And so even though it may not be the actual cash or whatever, by the time we've done Best Believe books or whatever products or, you know, we've learned to make certain that we connect those dots to assure that our marketing capability is, it's definitely on point. so that's how we're able.
For me, though, honestly, it's the gathering that's the point for me, because we need
right.
to have some kind of cohesive. The gathering, to me, is the most important equation to all of this. You know, if I sell $5 worth of books, fine. But it's about the gathering. If you are sitting at home griping about things need to be better, but you're
that's
not
right.
doing anything, then you need to be quiet, all right? But if you
absolutely.
Want to do something, then you need to step in and say, hey, we need to gather. That's why I read you Shirley's poem, The Gather, to the gathering, the women to gather, because when women gather, they become strong, they as a unit, and they could do so many things when we're out there in numbers. And I think that's just very important. And that's the main reason why I'm interested, is it's about the gathering.
Okay.
And
I truly appreciate that, because that was the spirit that the Million Woman March was really in. And, you know, it's been a battle to keep it, you know, in that kind of mindset. But you get it. And I really am thankful for that, because so many, unfortunately, this is why what I say to people is to be very careful, because our struggle, our plight for freedom and justice and upholding those things that our ancestors gave and did for us has become a hustle for some, you know.
Right, exactly.
You know, I call them poverty pimps. And feeding off of our crisis, feeding off of our pain, you know.
Right.
And so it's been difficult to connect with sisters and brothers who just, you know, because it's the right thing to do, it's been, you know, really difficult to connect with folks like that in this day and age. It's just been about, well, you know, what can I get out of it, or what can I? So that's why it kind of, you know, took me off guard for a moment, because, you know, over these past years, that's been few, far, and in between.
Yep. Hello?
Yep. So listen, we got one more caller that I want to bring in before we close out. Caller, thank you for holding. I just saw you there. And you're at 7492. 7492, your mic is open. Welcome to this segment of New Day.
Sister African, how are you doing? This is Brother
Lee. Virginia in the house.
I was just listening, checking out your program. I did want to say hello to your sister, Gabrielle, and my brother, Bobby Odum. They
How you doing, man?
Continue to be a fighter. And keep doing what you're doing. But I would like to make a couple announcements to your audience to give them a chance. So like the sister said, if they don't come to no gathering, that's another way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
We said that no participation, no right to observation, no right to speak. That's the bottom line. You know, if you don't participate, you don't have the right to observe anything. If you don't observe anything, you don't have nothing to say. You can't say anything no more than talking out of ignorance, and we don't want that. So that's another way of putting it. And the other thing, I'd just like to make a couple announcements to your audience. Starting tomorrow, we'd like to invite your audience to periodically check out the AAPRPGC website, which is www.aaprpgc.org. For the first time, we are calling worldwide to put on and organize a African Liberation Month. Normally known in May, we have African Liberation Day, but we have a host of series of activity globally and nationally that are going to take place throughout the whole month. So please check out our calendar. The second announcement we would like to let your audience know that for those who are interested in joining the African Awareness Association on the Freedom Ride, we'll be going to Cuba for 1 week, leaving for Cancun, which will be July the 23rd to 31st. So come and join us and meet your brothers and sisters and learn a lot from their revolution, which is ours. And the last thing I'd like to make the announcement of is that we welcome everyone to check out Africa on the Move tomorrow, every Sunday at 7 p.m. We have some interesting issues to talk about as it relates to Africa and our people. So on that note, sister, we thank you for allowing us to make the announcements, and we thank you and your guests for doing that. They all do on a daily basis, which is doing whatever they can to make our people, to help our people move forward. So again, sister, thank you for the time.
And thank you, Reverend Lee. And again, family, I want to share that the AAPRP is definitely one of the organizations that have been with us. I mean, over these years, again, we have really tested the waters to see what people, what groups, what organizations was going to, you know, really see what we're doing and really embrace it and appreciate it. And of course, having met with Baba Kwame Ture, and, you know, him saying, yeah, do what you do and do it the way you do it. That's what he told me. And so since then, the AAPRP GC has continued to be supportive to me and to MWM, and I'm so appreciative. So, you know, just wanted to say that for you, Brother Lee, Brother Haki, Brother Bob Brown, and, you know, the brothers and sisters from AAPRP, well, the brothers anyway, from AAPRP.
We got one name, one goal, one destiny. All right, thank you.
I know that's right. All right, good, thanks. Okay, and again, for those who are not familiar with the acronym AAPRP, that is the All African People's Revolutionary Party.
Okay. GC. Make sure you have the GC, Gin and Concrete. That's the difference.
Okay, got you. All right. Thank you, Brother Ling.
All right.
All right, family. So listen, we are going to close out. Before we do, we're going to go back to Sister Gabrielle, get her closing comments for tonight, and then have Baba Abiodun to give us the final word for tonight. So Sister Gabrielle, your closing comments.
My closing comments, gosh. My closing comments is for Black women, that we are more than we could possibly imagine, and that the women that we grew up with were our trailblazers, our mothers, our grandmothers, our aunties. They were the ones that were standing, you know, barefoot in the kitchen, cooking all this food for all these organizations. They were the ones that found meeting spaces, the ones that owned, you know, the beauty parlors where we came together, we gathered. To find out what's going on in the neighborhood. We were the ones that, you know, fed children who were left behind or took them in, even though we didn't have much, but we shared because we wanted to nourish our communities. And so, you know, when I did this book, I realized that the trailblazers for me are the women that I grew up around as a child growing up, whether they were my blood relatives or if they were relatives in the community, so to speak. And that's what Trailblazer really is. Trailblazers is about who we are as Black women. It is it's a big part of our lives. We don't do it. We don't understand it consciously. It's like an unconscious thing because we're always trying to make a way out of no way to get things done. So we just are driven that way. But it's my love letter really to all Black women. We are all trailblazers, and we need to learn more about the women that have done stuff, and we need to look within ourselves because there's a trailblazer inside of all of us.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, all right. All right, Bubba, you got it.
Well, all I can say is that I appreciate the opportunity to be on this evening and to talk about trailblazers and to talk about the whole concept of how Black women need to be seen and appreciated on every possible level, because when the mother is satisfied, when she's pleased, the world is a happier place, and things take place and things happen to make us all feel good, because mama is still in charge. I don't care how much money dad is making to run the house or to buy things for the house. I've never seen a house with a woman who was not in charge of the house, and the house needs to be confirmedly in charge by the woman, because we are in the house is on fire, and men are making the fire, and women are the only ones that can really put it out. And I'm looking forward to seeing. I'm looking forward to seeing some more major changes, not only with Black women, but women all over the world, because this is a time for women to step up. And Black women have always been at the forefront of every major activity that's taking place on the planet, and I'm looking forward to that continuing and even getting stronger.
All right, family. Well, you heard it right here, live and in living color. And, family, we will be back next week, same time. Again, we're in our 13th year of speaking truth to power independently. And, wow, what can we say? Another powerful program. We want to thank, of course, Sister Gabrielle David, and, of course, Baba Abiel June, and all of you, family, for tuning in. We're going to close out. Since Baba just talked about fire, well, we're going to close out with some fire. And since we talked about Sister Sonia Sanchez, well, we're going to let her close us out and let her talk to us about catching the fire. Until next time, family, we say, Pomoja to the Shinda. Together we shall win. And guess what? In our lifetime. Peace out.
Peace.
Thank you, Baba. Thank you, Gabrielle.
Thank you.
In the soft afternoon air, as you hold us all in a single day, I say, where is your fire? I say, where is your fire? You got to find it and pass it on. You got to find it and pass it on from you to me, from me to her, from her to him, from the son to the father, from the brother to the sister, from the daughter to the mother, from the mother to the child. I say, where is your fire? Can't you smell it coming out of our path? The fire of living, not dying. The fire of loving, not killing. The fire of blackness, not in the shadow. Where is our beautiful fire that gave life to the world? The fire of pyramids, the fire that burned through the hull of slave ships and made us bleed. The fire that made guns into chitlins, the fire that took rhythms and made jazz. The fire of thickens and notches that made us jump boundaries and barriers. The fire that took street talk and sounds and made righteous infants and rap. I say, where is your fire? The torch of life, full of Nzinga and Nat Turner and Gov and Du Bois and Vanderbilt Tamer, the Journal of Truth and Margin and Malcolm and Mandela. Brother, come catch your fire. Don't kill, hold your fire. Don't kill, learn your fire. Don't kill, be the fire. Don't kill, and burn with eyes that see our souls walking, singing, building, laughing, learning, loving, teaching, being, learning, loving, building, singing, walking, loving. Hey, 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 hey.
Hallelujah.